If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we have a bonus episode all about the first season of Love is Blind UK, which just finished airing on Netflix. So, obviously, warning at the top here, there are major spoilers ahead for this season. We talk about everything that happened this season, including on the reunion. So stop listening to this episode if you plan on watching Love is Blind UK, if you don't want to know what happens ahead of watching it, or obviously keep listening if you've watched it. But again, spoiler warning about Love is Blind UK, which just aired on Netflix. But if you have not watched Love is Blind UK, I highly recommend you watch it. It's especially if you like the US version. I actually think this is kind of better than a lot of the US seasons for several reasons. We get a lot of couples out of it. There's a lot of people to follow, which always I think makes for a better season. They're mostly a little bit more mature. The people skew more into their 30s versus like mid-20s, which is what the US version tends to cast. There's an added factor here too, because a lot of the people are from around the UK, which means that where they live is actually more of a factor in this season than on the US version, which they all take place in a singular city each season. So I think that added some interesting elements to some of the couples and the conversations they had in the real world. But yeah, overall, great season of reality TV. And today on the show, we have Claire Fallon on. Claire is the co-host of two podcasts. One is called Love to See It, which is wherever you get your podcasts. It's all about The Bachelor and some other dating shows. And then she also is the co-host of another podcast called Rich Text, which is part of a Substack that she has with her Love to See It co-host, Emma Gray. They go all the way back to HuffPost days together, and they are total experts on reality dating shows. Emma's out of town in Europe, but I wanted to still have Claire on to talk about the season of Love is Blind UK. And not only is she really great, obviously, at analyzing reality TV, but, you know, I'm obviously coming more from the Bravo perspective, and I don't have as much experience in analyzing the dating shows, and that it's a little different because you, as you'll see in my conversation with Claire, like thinking about these shows from like the relationship perspective, it just is a little bit, it's a different way of thinking. And you'll see in this conversation with Claire, she brings incredible analysis when it comes to those aspects of what we watch on these shows and how being in these relationships informs some of the decisions that we're making. Also how some of these people just fall into classic archetypes that we see on these shows a lot. Those are things that I don't always think about. And Claire brought that perspective and that expertise, which was really, really welcome in our conversation all about Love is Blind UK. So you'll hear my hour-long conversation with Claire in this episode. But first, I'm going to talk about the reunion. So Claire and I recorded on Friday, which was when we had seen all the episodes. There were three big drops of episodes for this season. But the reunion, which I wasn't even sure if we were getting, but the reunion that we just got came out on Monday today. when this episode is coming out. It came out at 4 p.m., so it's a quick turnaround here. But I wanted to watch that before putting this episode out, just so I could have like this holistic sort of end of season deep dive that you are used to getting, like with Housewives shows and Bravo shows where I include reunion talk. So Claire and I had not seen the reunion when we had our conversation, which mostly doesn't change things except for one couple. So again, spoiler alert, but it changes a lot of things with Sabrina and Steven, who was the first couple that we talked about in our conversation. You know, Emma dubbed them the golden couple because there was seemingly nothing wrong with them. And people were kind of shocked when the trailer for the reunion came out and they were not sitting on the same couch. Turns out they're actually not together anymore. So that was a big shock. So I'm going to get into the reunion pretty quickly here, and then I'll get to my conversation with Claire. So first of all, I mean, a huge complaint that I've had about the Love is Blind US reunions are Vanessa and Nick Lachey, who I do not think are very good hosts. I think they make it all about them. I think it's weird that they're always like showing PDA while hosting. And I think Vanessa sort of oversteps sometimes in terms of like her, how she calls out some of the men. It's weird energy. I still haven't watched a reunion on the US version of Love is Blind that I really loved. But these hosts, Emma and Matt Willis, are great. I think they're sort of emblematic of what hosts of these reunions should do. And turns out like they're super, they've been together for 20 years as a couple. He was in Busted, that boy band from the early 2000s. She's a really long time TV presenter in the UK. So they know what they're doing. So just shout out to them for being great hosts and making it a pretty solid reunion, I would say. But we'll just go couple by couple in the order that they talked about them in the reunion and got the updates. First up were Demi and Ollie. They are still not together. You know, it was Demi who said no at the altar. And even though her no at the altar kind of left the door open to them maybe seeing how things played out in the real world, it sounds like she is pretty confident and happy and content with her decision to step away from her relationship with Ollie. There doesn't seem to be much bad blood, I would say, but they are not still together. And actually, you know, there was that one mixer towards the end of the season where Ollie sort of kept mentioning this pod squad made of their Charlotte, who didn't really get much airtime during the pods, but he sort of was like saying how she was so fit and all this stuff. And they are actually seeing each other now. So he did find a relationship in the pods. It just wasn't with Demi. You know, she was in the audience for the reunion and it's like they said that it's complicated, but they're in a good spot. So like it sounds like they were kind of trying to cushion the blow of like saying they were just like outright dating, which it sounds like they kind of are. But Ollie ends that segment with saying, "Watch this space." So one of the most interesting parts about their segment was when Kat, because if you remember, Ollie was sort of interested in Demi and Kat, and he ultimately chose Demi. But Kat said at some point, I think in a confessional, that she didn't see Ollie and Demi working out in the real world. And the sort of prevailing takeaway from that was that she was implying that like looks-wise, it wasn't going to work and that Ollie wouldn't be into Demi, even though Kat had never seen Ollie. So she had a sort of answer for that on the reunion, and she got kind of emotional about it towards the end of that conversation. So I thought that, and also Jasmine sort of stuck up for Demi in that moment. So that was kind of nice to see. Sabrina and Steven, they were the big surprise. They're on opposite couches, completely unexpected. I mean, they had some of the least drama of all the couples on the season. And like, I was pretty shocked. I mean, their biggest hurdle was location. And it turns out that was sort of part of their downfall. So it sounds like they were kind of operating as a long distance couple. She was in Belfast, he was in London. And because of that, the communication just like totally fell apart between them, which caused them to lose their spark. You know, it was kind of tense though. Like she was accusing him of like not supporting her and, you know, making no adjustments for her communication wise because he's not really a phone person. He was saying that he doesn't really recognize this version of Sabrina that was in front of him on the stage. So like it was pretty tense. And like I honestly think they have more stuff to work out. I don't think they fully worked it out on this reunion, but it was a huge surprise, I think, to hear this. I mean, it makes sense that like their long distance relationship didn't hold up, but it's disappointing because I feel like they were really cute together and like they had a nice dynamic. So yeah, that was the biggest surprise of the whole reunion for me, obviously. And I think they're the only couple that, you know, the status of their relationship is different from where it was at the end of the season. Next up are Bobby and Jasmine. You'll hear us talk the least about them in this episode because there's not that much to discuss with them. They're a pretty solid couple. They seem to be mostly on the same page. She is the intense mom with boundary issues, but the mom was in the audience for the reunion. She totally approves of the relationship. Bobby and Jasmine are still together. They're very happy. They moved in together. So you know what? Good for them. They're trying for a baby. So I kind of love them. They're one of my faves. And, you know, they give you a lot of hope, I think, for this experiment that it can work out for some of them. Next up were Tom and Maria. They were on the same couch, but they are still not together. It sounds like the values part, which is sort of why Tom left her at the altar in that finale. It sounds like that is sort of what has kept them apart and made them realize they're not right for each other. It was nice to see Tom sort of admit that some of the stuff watching back was kind of ugly for him to see, and he kind of took ownership of some of that, which was good to see. But Maria also seemed a little bit incensed by some of it. So I think, you know, good for her for voicing that, but also I think good for him for taking some ownership over some of his like more cringe, kind of harsh moments. They also addressed the Tash stuff. Tash was in the audience. She was the one that Tom was sort of, you know, choosing between Maria and Tash, and he chose Maria. It looked like, I mean, they had that really emotional conversation at that mixer towards the end of the season where she told him that she loved him, but she was actually talking about the past. So they sort of cleared the air on that, which was good for them to do, because it would have been weird for her to say to him that she still loved him, but she was actually talking about back in the pod, she loved him. One of my favorite parts also was sort of where Maria was like, no, we're all good. Like, there's no bad blood between us. Like everything sort of like squashed. So that was good to see. But Naya and Nicole, they're sort of like, I mean, they, what an interesting path they had. I mean, they sort of emerged as one of the, I mean, really this, I think maybe the strongest couple, one of the couples that like sort of, they exude, whereas like Jasmine and Bobby are really like low key and like on the same page that way. But Naya and Nicole are like really giddy, and they're kind of like school children together in like a really cute way. Like they just, you know, there was this video package of them traveling the world and like him scaring her all these different times. Like they just like are, they clearly are like, they love being around each other. They love each other. They make each other laugh. And they're just really cute to me. I don't know. We got some really amazing unseen footage of both of them at the end of their first date in the pods, which we had not seen before. Sort of him leaving the room, her sitting there being really giddy. Like they clearly had the connection from the beginning. And it's kind of wild that she did choose Sam, but they both sort of admitted that they could have been a little bit more, you know, upfront and open about like how much they felt about one another and how much they were feeling about one another. And maybe they could have been on a different path if they had done that. But ultimately, I don't think they can have any regrets, because I think that, like, you know, she made a little bit of a mistake, but she course corrected and Sam came out on stage. I was surprised he didn't get booed, honestly, but I guess it's the Brits aren't going to boo. But, you know, we found out that it was Nicole who told Sam when they got out of the pods that she didn't want to go to Greece with him. She didn't want to do this on TV, and he didn't take that well. It would have been interesting to hear if like Sam had been the one to sort of question it, but it was her. She confirmed that. And Sam, you know, admitted that he maybe wasn't ready to do this experiment and he has regrets from the whole thing. But probably the best moment of the whole reunion was Demi stepping in. They were talking about how Sam at the mixer had told Benaiah that Nicole had expressed interest in sleeping with him, which was a big deal in general, because that's a really intimate thing to say, but also because she had told Benaiah that she's really even more selective maybe than the average person about who she sleeps with and who she sort of like gives her body to. So for Sam to tell Benaiah that Nicole was like really trying to sleep with him was, you know, just like so disrespectful. You know, he was asked about that and he was sort of talking in circles. He regrets it. And then Demi steps in. She's like, dude, just apologize to Nicole. Like, it was disrespectful. And that got major applause from the audience. I loved that moment. And he did apologize to her, but only when goaded. So take that as you will. And then lastly, Kat and Freddie. I mean, again, I say in this episode that I was rooting for them. I was rooting for them just because, I don't know, I think I did really like them individually. And even though they weren't right together, I think you wanted to sort of maybe see them figure it out. When they were good, they had a really nice, like, kind of fun rapport. But ultimately, it sounds like their lifestyles were just too different and they've stayed apart. You know, when Freddie said no at the altar, Kat was so distraught and she was so, like, you know, hurt by it, you know, rightly so. And it sounded like he was sort of open to continuing a relationship, but it sounds like that just was never going to be in the cards. And they both sort of realized, like, and they said 50-50, that, like, their lifestyles were just too different. And they both sort of agreed with the split and that being the right thing to do. So it was nice to see that Kat sort of has gotten over some of that emotion that she was feeling about it. We learned that Kat gave the earrings back that Freddie had left for her in the bridal suite before the wedding. And I didn't really understand this part. Freddie said that he felt he would have been damned if he didn't for giving them to her. But like, I don't know, nobody else gave a gift like that. So I'm not really sure what he's getting at there. Like, if he had not given the earrings to her, I don't think he would have been damned if he didn't do that, you know? And even she said, like, it's sort of unlike him for him to, like, give a gift like that. So I don't know. I didn't really totally understand what he was saying there. But his sister, Betsy Dora, what a name, was asked from the audience, if she stands by kind of pulling him aside before the wedding and expressing her doubts. And she said she stand by what she said. And what was really interesting about that was that Kat said that she agrees, that she agreed with what Betsy Dora said in hindsight. So again, it sounds like Kat, and she got emotional towards the end of this reunion, but she basically like thanked Freddie. She was like, I learned a lot from you. We had an amazing time together. You made me laugh more than anybody's ever made me laugh. She actually showed, I think, some of the most growth out of all these people. And I think that, you know, it makes watching the show worth it, I think. Even if some of these people don't actually end up together, it's nice to see some of these people really learn from watching themselves back. I mean, how many interviews have I done with reality stars? So many of them say that one of the reasons why they really like being on reality TV is because watching yourself back and seeing how you act, it can be a form of self-improvement, of therapy, whatever you want to label it, but like it's a way to sort of right some of your ways and to sort of improve some of your like worst behaviors. And it sounds like Kat really took that. And it sounds like Tom might also be thinking the same thing. Sam, I don't know if I believe him, but he said he did. So we'll see. But I think that's a really nice thing to take away from this. That, like, even though some of these relationships don't work out, there's still value in doing some of this, even if it's just for your own self-improvement. So that is the reunion. We're getting a second season of Love is Blind UK. So we'll be doing this again in a year, probably. But let's get to my full chat about the full season. I mean, we talk about a lot. We really psychoanalyze a lot of these relationships. That's with Claire Fallon, the co-host of Love to See It, and Rich Text. Love to See It is wherever you get your podcast, and Rich Text is on Substack. Also, highly recommend her newsletter, Rich Text, which is, they send out recommendations for like things to read, watch, listen to, similarly to what I do every single week. I love reading their newsletter, so definitely go subscribe to that. So keep listening for my conversation with Claire Fallon about Love is Blind UK Season 1. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you get your podcasts. And we will be back tomorrow with our regularly scheduled episode, which will be an interview with Caroline Stanberry from The Real Housewives of Dubai, as well as a recap of an event that I went to on Sunday with Lindsay Hubbard from Summer House. Enjoy. I want to gab. All right, today we're gabbing with Claire Fallon, co-host of the Love to See It podcast, as well as the co-writer and co-host of the Rich Text podcast and newsletter with Emma Gray. Claire is an expert in all things reality TV, but particularly reality TV dating shows. And since she's been talking about Love is Blind UK on Rich Text, and I've actually just been dying to talk about it with somebody, I invited Claire on today to dissect this season now that we've seen all of it, minus the reunion. But I think there's enough here to discuss to get the kind of the full picture here. So Claire, thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm so psyched to talk about this show.
So before we jump into the season of Love is Blind UK, the first season of Love is Blind UK, I just want you to kind of give listeners just a background on, you know, your reality TV analysis, because you go way back with The Bachelor mm-hmm. in particular, but just give us sort of the lay of the land with that and then kind of bring us into your relationship with Netflix reality shows as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Emma Gray and I started covering The Bachelor for podcast Love to See It, which was a HuffPost podcast. We were both HuffPost journalists at the time in 2015. Our first season was, I think, the Caitlin and Britt dual bachelorette duking it out season.
What a season.
I know. I can't believe that was almost 10 years ago. So yeah, the concept of the podcast was that it was going to be an overtly feminist recap of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. That's the perspective that we brought to the show. And then a few years ago, we left HuffPost. We got laid off and we restarted the podcast as more of a year-round show. So then we started being able to cover other reality dating shows, rom-coms, you know, other things that look at romantic narrative in that way. And so we then started being able to dabble in like Netflix, which is great because that's exactly when Netflix was starting to explode. And we were seeing like the Too Hot to Handles.
Yep.
The Love is Blinds. And I don't know if I would have guessed that Love is Blind would become kind of the juggernaut of the set of dating shows that Netflix came up with, but it's taking over.
It completely has. Yeah, it actually is the only Netflix reality show
that I really watch. Like, I don't go in. I did a little bit of Too Hot to Handle when it first came out. Like, I'm familiar with the Harry Jowsies of the world, but but I have not done The Perfect Match, The Ultimatum. I can't go that deep. But Love is Blind, I feel like it could have been this experiment that didn't work. And I feel like the first season of Love is Blind, the US version, was just so good. And it resulted I actually think that, I don't know if it would have been as successful if we didn't have Lauren and Cameron, that they were like this couple that like everyone just like really loved and wanted to root for. And there is success coming out of that show. And so I think that kind of helped it get onto this track of like, oh, like this is a legit place to find love and it'd be entertaining.
Yeah, it became the water cooler show. Like everyone wanted to talk about it. So then you watched it so you could talk with everyone about it. And I think that what you're pointing to is really important to its success, which is that because it follows multiple couples, you can have all the different kinds of storyline. You can have the disaster storyline where a couple seems like they're doing great and then they implode. And you can also have the storyline where there's a golden couple, you get them all in one season. And that first season, we had a golden couple to root for. They were kind of boring because they never had any drama. That's fine. They gave you love to believe in. And then another couple or love triangle gave you tons of drama and were just the train wreck you wanted to watch. And that's been, I think, key to their huge success.
Completely. And I think it's also interesting. And I think that one of the reasons why this first season of Love is Blind UK worked out so well is that like, there have been a couple seasons where like there aren't enough couples to follow like post pods, post vacation, I would say. And like this season of Love is Blind UK had a lot of couples. I mean, the best seasons of Love is Blind give us a lot of people to follow. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I sometimes enjoy when a season just collapses just for the sheer chaos of it all. I think it was Houston that just completely fell apart. Yes. There was like two couples left by the end, but it's not good for the health of the show. Like you can have maybe one season where it all goes to hell, but generally you're going to want lots of material to work with, lots of couples, lots of relationships. And the fact that they lost a couple and then were immediately able to reboot it with the second choice option was, I mean, brilliant. They really got that back on track. And we ended up with a full slate of couples, which we don't often see by wedding day.
Yeah. So I think after maybe the first round of episodes, I read this great little piece in the New York Times about Love is Blind UK and sort of some of the challenges that they had in bringing it over to bring this format overseas. And the producers were talking about how they were a little bit worried that British contestants wouldn't be as open and vulnerable and like emotional as their American counterparts are, just like kind of from a cultural perspective and like how, like, you know, the stiff upper lip, you know? And they said they were very surprised about how open and vulnerable people were in the pods. And part of the reason for that was because, or to sort of combat that, they cast slightly older contestants than we see on the American version. Did that make a difference for you that these people were mostly like sort of in their early 30s versus mid-20s, I would say, is kind of the average on the US version?
Yeah, I thought that was really smart. It's something that fans of the franchise have been asking for in the US for a long time. Like, why do you cast so many 24-year-olds to get instantly married to someone they've never met? No wonder it ends in disaster a lot of the time. I think that's probably partly why they do it. And I think that one thing we saw a lot less of as a result was just petty drama in the quarters. We didn't really see any bullying amongst the women. Very minimal drama amongst the men. It was really just Sam and Benaiah because Sam was talking shit. And mostly they all seemed sort of focused on the mission of the show, which I think contributed to like the serious couples that we saw. I did think that there was maybe some hints of the stiff upper lip thing among some of the men, especially.
Yeah. I think with Tom, especially, I see that.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah. And he hides it well. Like even Maria would say, oh, he's so sensitive and emotional. But it seems to me like there's a lot going on under the surface with Tom that he's not necessarily showing us. But yeah, I think that was really smart. I wish they would do that more often on the US shows.
Yeah.
But it's a different production team, I guess. So
yeah, I think it is. All right. So I think the best way to sort of go about getting into everything about the season. Let's just go couple by couple. I think that might be the best way to do it. And we're going to go in order of how when they showed us their weddings in the last two episodes. And it goes without saying, if you're listening, there are spoilers ahead about the season of Love is Blind UK. I highly recommend going to watch it. If you pause this episode, go watch it and then come back. All right. So let's start with Sabrina and Steven. To me, they always seemed like one of the more rock solid couples. Like, I think I didn't see that many red flags or hurdles they were going to kind of have to address. And I feel like their biggest one was like where they were going to live, basically. What did you think about them kind of throughout the season?
I thought it was pretty clear from their first meeting that they were being positioned as like the Lauren and Cameron.
For sure.
Emma and I always say there's like, they try to have a golden couple in every season, right?
Makes
it
sense.
Doesn't always work out. Sometimes the golden couple falls apart or you can see the seams, but the way that they were just being presented was clearly positioned that they weren't going to have big obstacles. Like, we didn't see anyone else really that either of them was talking to. Mm-hmm. We weren't being shown moments of them having major conflict. At one point, like later when they're meeting friends and family, Steven references that they've had rough spots or difficulties. Well, we never saw any of those. So that just goes to show you what the show wants us to think about their relationship.
They choose for us to see certain things. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. And that makes you feel a certain confidence that they're going to succeed.
And weren't they also the first ones to get out of the pods too? Were they the first ones to meet?
Well, I don't know the exact timeline because we have read in the past that they typically all actually do propose on the same day.
Got it.
And they meet on the same day, but they present those in a staggered way to sort of for narrative flow. So I don't know if they actually met first, but that is the spot they were given.
That's where we got. Yeah. And also like I actually found myself in some of those episodes where they were back from vacation, back from Greece. I was like, wait, we have not checked in with Sabrina and Steven in quite some time. Like, they didn't even get that much of a check-in because there just mustn't have been not that much going on with them.
Yeah. Whenever we check in with them, it's like, oh, don't we just love spending time together? Like, we could do it in Belfast or we could do it in London. We just love doing it. It's like, okay, nice to know you guys are doing well.
But I literally had this thought towards the end of the season. I was like, they're kind of like giving me Marianne and Connell from Normal People. Like,
oh yeah,
they echoed that a little bit to me in a way that I really loved. But obviously they end up getting married. There's not much drama there. It's just they're the golden couple, as you said. So
yeah, and I do the Marianne and Connell thing is smart because he's the jock and she's a little bit more.
Yeah.
Not into CrossFit, as she puts it. she's like, you're part of the cult. But I just love listening to her accent also. I was this makes me want to move to Ireland just to listen to people talk.
1,000%. All right. So let's move on to the next couple, Maria and Tom. This is like kind of a complicated one, I think. Mm-hmm. They were always like slightly an unexpected match, but I really liked their dynamic in the pods. I thought that like there was some sort of balance there. And like, I was really drawn to her in particular and just like her delivery and just like how she carries herself. I guess, what were your kind of instincts about them as a couple and how did that change as the season went on?
Yeah, I felt good about them initially because they did have such a good
rapport.
They laughed together. They spoke really openly with each other. They were supportive with each other. But they were like a real test case for the show's conceit because they have pretty significant differences culturally, religiously, you know, they're different races. Like, these are the kind of things that the pods are supposed to show that you can overcome. And of course, when you get into the real world, that's when the rubber hits the road on those things. So by the second drop of episodes, I was starting to think that it was pretty likely that it would be a sort of bittersweet parting at the altar because there was just so much that was coming up on those fronts. And also when he saw Tash and he was like, oh no, the woman with a similar background to me is also really hot. I was like, oh God.
Yeah, I know. It was interesting because it's like she has this pretty intense family and she comes from a different culture than he does. And I think because of how she grew up and the culture she grew up around, she has pretty old school views of gender roles, I would say, sort of in a marriage. And you know, one of their early things was in the real world was that he let her pay for something. And she thought that was like, you know, a huge deal, and she kind of took offense to that. And then on the flip side, you know, one of the things that I think that he, one of the red flags from his side was how he was talking about profession and class. And it was pretty like kind of stereotypically snobby of him. I think they both showed like things that I wasn't necessarily expecting from them, from the pods, but they were pretty big differences or indicative of big differences.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I thought it was interesting how they didn't fall in such neat ways, in the sense that like Maria says, oh, my values are more old school, I expect to be paid for on dates. But she comes across as quite like
modern,
confident, modern, yeah, independent. And like, she is proud of her career. You know, she's not someone who presents in a sort of trad wife way that she is ready to like submit to a man. And so I think that those values, you know, might mean something a little bit different to her than maybe Tom is hearing. And also like, Tom is there saying like, oh, I want a modern, independent woman, and I want her to teach my future daughter and son that women are strong and independent. But he is kind of denigrating her work.
Yeah.
And also he picked her knowing that was her work. And so it seems like he was drawn to her and so many of those qualities about her while also kind of disdaining them, which troubled me. Like, one thing that Emma and I wondered is, he says to Tash when they meet, oh, I thought you might look more geeky because you're into like computer programming and geeky stuff. Whereas, you know, he picked someone who was a makeup artist, and he's like, that, I don't respect that. But did he also think she's probably beautiful? You know what I mean? Like, it seems like he's not sure whether he wants the independent woman or not.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And like, the thing about her being upset that he let her pay on a date, like, that's something that, you know, is always just going to come out probably in the real world, right? But I was surprised that that conversation about career hadn't happened earlier, because it happened like a several days or however long into them being in the real world. And like you said, he knew she was a makeup artist, you know? So like, he was hiding this sort of feeling that he was having about that fact almost. Yeah.
It seems like he was glossing over it with the, oh, well, Tash and I, she would fit more easily into my life. We're more similar in certain ways. Like, he was kind of papering it over with those sort of generalities. And then when you hit up against the specifics, which are like, I don't respect your work, like, I don't understand your values, the specifics are harder to hand wave.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. Before we get to their wedding, I loved her older sister. She was a standout sort of side character for me in this whole season. Like, I just liked how protective she was and how like kind of unapologetic she was. I loved her. She was great.
Yeah, she was amazing. And the side eye that she gives Maria when Maria says they connected over their sense of humor, I loved that like sibling moment, where, because you can tell they like share that sensibility, but also she was sort of like, Maria, you need to tone it down.
And she wasn't afraid when he was meeting the family, and Maria sort of like made this like wide-eyed face over, I forget exactly what it was, but she's like, oh, what was that face? You know, like she was like really out there to protect her.
That was when Tom was saying he agreed with their family values of family over like material things and ambition. Yes. And Maria was like, really?
And the sister's like, wait, huh? What was that? Yeah. I loved her.
Yeah. She was great.
And then at the wedding, he's the one that says no to her, which is always, I mean, that was, if it was not going to happen, it was going to be him saying no, I thought. That's what I was expecting, I guess, out of it, just sort of how they were kind of handling themselves in the lead up to it. Mm-hmm. And that was one where he left her at the altar, right? He says, you know, we have differences in values. And then he walks away, correct? Yeah.
He gives the speech and then he kisses her hand and says, you look so beautiful. And then he basically runs down the aisle.
You know, if they're instructed to walk away?
No, actually, Emma and I were talking this over in our recap, because it seems like often they don't know quite what to do or when to leave. But I do think that if they're not going to get married, they do kind of have to leave at some point. They're not walking down at the end of the ceremony, right? So they typically leave at some point, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like it's choreographed at all. They always seem sort of out of loss.
It doesn't seem choreographed, but I feel like that's the one actually like clunky part about this show, is that sort of, it's the biggest moment of the show.
Yeah.
But, But I sometimes feel as a viewer, I'm like, well, like in any normal relationship, they would have talked about this 3 days ago and been like, hey, like it's not the right time. So they're clearly told, like, I don't know, in the last 3 days before your wedding, the last whatever, like you can't really, there's something that's like not communicated clearly. And like,
yeah.
And by waiting to have that moment, you know, for all the family to show up, all the stuff to be set up, put the outfits on, put the hair and makeup on, they go down the aisle, they say their vows. By waiting till that moment specifically, it's like it's threatening any future they have with one another because it's betraying the other person. And like, I just would love to know what the instruction is there, because I know this is an experiment, but like in a real world, you know, environment, you're not waiting until that moment to say, oh, now is not the right time, you know?
Right. Or maybe you would have some plan for like, if one of us feels like this isn't the right time, like, here's what we'll do in the moment.
Betraying you. Like, you know, I might say this. Right. Totally.
Yeah. There never seems to be a plan. I was wondering if it just feels too like superstitious for people, but I'm sure production.
Yeah. Cause I'm just sort of like, if you're the person that's saying no, but you genuinely want to like continue a relationship with the other person, then you're not waiting until that moment, right? Like if you're Freddie, if you're Tom.
And that's probably why.
Yeah, it's a huge betrayal.
Yeah,
it's a huge betrayal. So what was your take on how it ended for them at the altar?
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, one thing that always amuses me is that you can usually tell from the vows before they ever say I do, because Tom's were very... in retrospect, like he was so like, look back at the greatest hits. We've had such a good time together. Thanks for everything. And Maria's were not that certain either. I think they were both feeling plenty of doubts, but I do think that Maria was ready to take the leap and Tom wasn't, as you said. And I did feel like maybe he should have waited for her to respond before he rushed away at the end.
For sure.
It felt a little bit... cowardly cold. Yeah. I was a little disappointed, especially because her family was so welcoming to him and really embraced him. And it doesn't seem like he spoke to them or, you know, really, it was more like he was closing, like just so soon after being like, thank you for welcoming me to the family. That means so much to me. He was sort of like, well, that was fun. I'm never going to speak to them again, was sort of the tone.
That was afterwards. The vibe. Yeah, for sure.
What did you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that he's one of the people that disappointed me the most in terms of like what I thought about them at the beginning of the season and how I ended up feeling about them. I don't know if he was actively hiding his true colors or if it just takes a little bit of time for that to come out. Again, because he was the most kind of stereotypically like buttoned up British guy, I think, that we saw this season. But yeah, I was really disappointed in him and how he handled that, especially because I did feel especially drawn to Maria and just how she carried herself overall. Like, she seems like a really good person to me. And I just hate seeing people treated like that.
I agree. And she took some shit from him and worked past it and was willing to really see the best in him. You know, she stood up there in her vows and said, you let me be myself without judgment, to someone who not long before had told her that he judged her for being a makeup artist instead of a PR executive. Like, she was willing to see the side of him that did accept parts of her and to think of that as his true character and to say, like, you're a really honest, good man and you inspire me. And yeah, he let us down. I feel like he did
completely.
Better than saying yes if he didn't like mean it, but
yeah, I agree. But it
the
just
lead up wasn't great.
He didn't handle it well.
Yeah.
All right. Next couple for us to talk about, Claire, is Demi and Ollie. So to me, like in the pods, this was sort of like the classic Love is Blind setup of like, here's this guy who some might say might have like slightly fuckboy energy some points in the pods. He's choosing between these two women who sort of represent like love and lust for him, kind of, in terms of like what he's getting from them. And he chooses love. And then later on in the process, he gets to see who sort of like the object of his lust was. And I think that setup to me is like, I feel like we've seen it before on this show. They were cute in the pods, I thought, but they had a really rough time in Greece, which to me, I never fully recovered from that as a viewer. And I don't think they ever fully recovered from that as a couple. What was your read on sort of the beginning stages of them?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's definitely a setup we've seen before. I thought a lot about Shane and Shayna and Natalie.
Absolutely.
Their courtship. They were
the same thing.
Doing the same things with Kat, of like asking what she was wearing and being like, she's such a seductress. That way that he was clearly conceptualizing as one of them as sex and the other one as love was very palpable. And then I had a lot of like anxiety about them in Greece. And I also thought a lot of that was down to the way they would edit the trailers to make it seem like Ollie would basically say that he wasn't into her, that
right.
she wasn't his type, that he saw her as just a friend. And then when you would see the actual episode, you never actually saw him really expressing that in context. It was always more like, I feel uncomfortable with being interrogated right now. I'm not really sure if this is the right time for us to pursue this side of our relationship. And so I started to feel like maybe my anxiety was just being like manipulated by the show and also by the fact that they dealt with a lot of scrutiny from the other couples. And so they're like maybe the couple that I feel the most unsure in a sense about what actually went on in their relationship, because I can't really tell what was editing and producing and
yeah,
their friends
fair.
Meddling and what was them.
That's really fair, because also I just feel like they were kind of distinctly different as a couple, or at least the way we saw it in each kind of phase of this show. And like, because they had a really rough Greece, but like they were pretty great in the real world. And like, they seemed like they kind of settled into this like kind of cool, easy, mostly easy dynamic, I would say, in the real world. Like, I think about the scene where he's meeting her friends and they really hit it off. And it's actually like really sweet. I thought he was like, I can see us like all having dinner together kind of thing. And like, I personally liked that scene, but I just didn't, the way that he reacted to Jasmine sort of questioning him and that whole scene where all the couples were getting together and he was like, I just want to leave. That stayed with me. And I just,
yeah,
there was something in that.
Did you think that Jasmine was at fault there a little bit though?
She definitely like had some liquid courage that was sort of like, I think, affecting her delivery of that moment. Like, I liked her sentiment, but I didn't love her delivery of how she confronted Ollie, especially like with Bobby sitting there too. It was just kind of like, it wasn't handled correctly, I would say. But I think that, did you think she was wrong for confronting him?
I think that she should have just dropped it much sooner, because his initial responses to her were fine.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't let it go. And that's when you saw him start to become really defensive. And if you say, oh, no, you're right, I should have handled that differently with Demi, and I've been thinking the same thing. No, you're right, I am going to do that. Absolutely. And she still is kind of poking at you. I would understand that response of like, there's nothing I can say that's going to resolve this conversation. So what are we doing here?
I just think that she kind of picked up on something, and she didn't believe him. And I think that she picked up on Ollie sort of convincing himself that he was more into Demi, that maybe he actually was. And I kind of got the sense of that too. Like, even literally when they're at the altar and he's like, he almost is like feigning shock at her saying, not saying I do. It almost felt like his reaction was like put on. He was like, what?
That's
like,
so like, interesting. I had such a different reaction to his.
Let's talk about it. Because I read his reaction as a little bit put on. Like, I thought it was a little bit like, oh, you're saying no. And that's sort of how I took it. And it felt a little bit like he convinced himself that he was ready for somebody like Demi and sort of ready to settle down in that way. And I don't know. I don't know if he was. How did you read it?
I don't know if he was ready. And I don't know if he would have said yes, to be honest.
Right.
But I do think he was surprised that she said no.
Right. But I think he was surprised she said no, but I don't think he was surprised in like, oh, this hurts me so bad. I think he was surprised just because she was surprised she said no. She turned him down.
Right. I remember, I think my reaction was like, oh, the way that he's reacting just really reminds me of the way that like my preschooler would react to something he doesn't understand. Like, it was just very like,
totally.
Why? Like, looking around, like, are you talking to me? Like, what?
Like, and immature. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just felt sort of like, I don't know. I like Ollie, but yeah, there's a lot there that we don't know about him. I felt in that moment like it was almost sort of a vulnerable response, because so often people are like stoic or angry when they get turned down at the altar. And he was just seemed so much more just like,
Yeah.
Like, I almost felt like we were seeing something more genuine because it was such a weird response. Like, it was so unusual. But maybe that's not true. You know, it's possible that he was like exaggerating and maybe I was reading that incorrectly. Yeah, I do think that it's possible that Ollie was talking himself into things. But then again, I was like, a lot of the evidence for that is just other people's reactions to that and like editing moments.
You're right. Yeah.
I found myself as the show went on being a little more generous to him about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they did have a really great several episodes in London, like that conversation they had about him having ADHD, like, oh, that was a really cool, vulnerable moment. I thought that he, both meeting and the families, were pretty great scenes, but I just never forgot the Grease part. I just couldn't really get past it, I guess.
Yeah. And one of the red flags for me was definitely, or like orange flags, was that he did want to put off the intimacy, just because I've watched so much of this show. And when that happens, it's usually a sign that something is not right in that partner's feelings toward the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But I was expecting things to like devolve, and they didn't. So I was like, maybe this was just a different situation. I don't know. I came to really like their dynamic by the end. And I think that because Demi was the one who needed to have more power of choice in the relationship, because she was very aware that Ollie was choosing between her and Kat, that she needed to be the one to say no. It's possible that that means they'll be able to date after this, but to me, it's like maybe 60-40 that will actually happen.
I think you're right. They were probably the best chance of the people who said no at the altar this season.
Neither of them is mad.
Yeah, exactly. He seemed to take it the best, I would say. Yeah. And that didn't feel like she was abandoning him at the altar in some weird way. Like, it felt like they were sort of like, okay, we'll see. Yeah.
She was like, thank you so much for being such an amazing partner that I have the courage to choose to maybe marry you in the future instead of right now. It was like the most affirming possible framing.
100%. All right. Next up is probably the other most solid couple, Jasmine and Bobby. You know, they didn't have that much drama throughout. It was kind of similarly to Sabrina and Steven. I also liked Jasmine a lot throughout. Like, she was really opinionated. She was really kind of strong-willed in what she believed. And she never hid that. You know, I think she was always pretty upfront about that, which I really appreciated. Obviously, the biggest hurdle I think we saw as viewers was her mother, who she needs to create boundaries with, who they seem very close. But it seems like, or it sounds like, she's ready to create those boundaries and she's willing to create those boundaries, which gave me hope that, like, she won't let the mother meddle in her relationship. What did you think of Jasmine and Bobby?
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. Yeah, Bobby just kind of lets Jasmine shine, which is a funny dynamic considering that he is at least a former aspiring pop star. That's great that he is able to kind of let her shine. But the fact that he took her mom's interrogation and seemed so unruffled by that made me really sure that they were going to go the distance. So I wasn't surprised at all that they got married. I think that also you can see a lot of Jasmine, like, where her personality comes from in her mom, like that sense that love is protectiveness. Love is grilling your loved one's partner until you maybe scare them away. It definitely is something that Jasmine knows she needs to set some boundaries, but she also appreciates it. And she thinks that that is how she should express love for her friends as well. So that was interesting to kind of see her behavior with Demi and Ollie and then get to the meeting with her mom and be like, oh, okay, now it all makes sense.
So true. That's a really good through line. Yeah, I had not put that together, but that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. It's a type, but she's great. And she's so composed and so sure of what she wants. And yeah, I think as a couple, they're very lovable.
Yeah. There's not that much else to say about them, I feel like. I'm just happy for them. Love that. Like, that's when you know that it's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to end off with two of the more complicated situations. Mm-hmm. The first is going to be Benaya and Nicole and Sam in parentheses. You know, this one, she chose lust over love initially. She kind of chose this, like, kind of sexier option in Sam. I mean, even in that reveal they had, you could tell there was immediate regret there. And he, talk about putting it on, like he was full on acting. And I know that he is a professional actor. So he was, to me, he epitomizes there for the wrong reasons. Like it was just like, he was not into her. She was not into him. Let's start with that reveal. What did you read? Obviously pick up on that when that first happened.
I mean, it was palpable. I think the thing that always unsettled me the most about Sam and that was really present in the reveal is the way that he keeps being like, just trust me, or like, why won't anyone open up to me? In a, like, that's his whole personality, is wondering why no one will give him a chance and like reassuring people that they really should trust him. And that's to me a very suspicious behavior. I'm like, all you're doing is trying to convince me to make myself vulnerable to you, and you're not really showing me anything solid about what's going to be there when I do that. Like, more showing, less telling. And so they meet for the first time and she's like clearly a little anxious, and he just keeps being like, just trust me, just trust me, just trust me, just trust me.
And she's like, what?
Which would only fuel my fear. Yeah, she's like, trust you about what exactly? And so the lack of chemistry, emotional,
was very clear,
was very immediate.
Right when you were talking, Claire, I was like, you know what, the way you're talking kind of makes me realize that Sam reminds me of like early Nick Vile vibes.
Ouch. Yeah, that's interesting. I haven't rewatched that first season in a really long time. I was obviously much younger when it aired, and Nick was totally my favorite on the season. I wrote like a blog defending him.
Amazing.
When he came on Caitlin's season.
I just never trusted how he was how he was jumping between a bunch, like
a
he
lot
was
of
only
people,
four seasons or whatever. Yeah, I didn't
people
I
don't
never
trusted
him.
It.
Yeah.
No,
so.
I mean, and we've known Nick for years now, but
I can say it. You don't need to say it.
Yeah. So there is like a certain, as I get older, I understand more about why certain things rub people the wrong way that I used to not be bothered by. Like there is sometimes there can be a sort of claim to emotional vulnerability that is more of like a honey trap or something.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
But you, as a woman, you eventually learn to be more on guard for.
Yeah. Sure. So in this situation, so like, we basically cut to Nicole and she's like, yeah, like it was immediately clear, like it was me and Sam were not it. I wish we had gotten to see that on camera. I will say, like, I kind of wish I had gotten to see how that actually happened. Was that completely her? It sounded like it was completely her, like just kind of shutting him down, but I'd love to see how he took it. But ultimately she winds up kind of winning Benaya back, convincing him to give her another chance. They get to Greece and immediately it's like night and day. They have really sweet chemistry. It kind of carried over from the pods to being, you know, there when they're in person together. And ultimately, Sam ended up being their sort of biggest hurdle. He was sort of always a factor for them throughout this process. He showed up two more times, I think. And, you know, they each had their kind of moment with him. But yeah, that to me seemed like their biggest thing, sort of like him getting over that betrayal that she didn't choose him first, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think one thing that that struck me about their reunion when he immediately proposes in the cafe is that he was taking like some responsibility, which is the only way that he could maybe like bring himself to get back together with her, was to say like, maybe I have been too reserved. I wasn't reassuring you enough about how I felt. I'm ready to really change that. I'm ready to really show you how I feel. And so you won't have cause to doubt that again. And like that allowed them to maybe rebuild the relationship. I think there are probably other points of tension, but they just weren't as fun for the show to explore as the Sam situation. Like, is Benaya going to be willing to settle down? Does Nicole want to join him on some of his adventures? We don't actually know where they landed on that. So that was left.
And I guess I think it did come up in their part of the wedding episode. I think that was mentioned of like,
it was mentioned.
And it sort of reminded you like, oh, like there is another factor here. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They mentioned a couple issues and I was like, oh yeah, we haven't seen them discuss any of those really. It's all just been Sam and how good it is that we're together now instead of Sam.
Right. Yeah. I guess like, I guess I was convinced by Benaiah that like he was willing to change for her kind of overall. Like, I guess when you brought up like what, how he handled that proposal and kind of taking ownership of certain things, because in the pods, they did talk about that a lot in the pod, sort of like how he is and if whether he could choose sort of settling down over this adventure, kind of adventurous characteristic that he has. And like, I believed him that he was like willing to let go of that. Yeah, I believed him.
Yeah, I also think that, I mean, this is why I would have loved to see them discuss it more. We didn't. I got the sense that Nicole was also interested in some level of like the wanderlust lifestyle, that maybe she wanted to go on more adventures and he wanted to have more of a home base, because she was very much like, oh, well, I have this corporate job, but my real goal is like off-grid living. That's what I love, is off-grid living. And I was like, oh, maybe they actually do kind of just like match each other's freak more than they seem to, right? Like they want the same things. They're just coming from different ends of it. And maybe they can meet in the middle. But we don't see any.
Yeah, because he sort of immediately presents as like more irreverent and more like kind of out there in terms of maybe his lifestyle. And I think that she is more like secretly like that.
Right. Yeah. Like you scratch the surface and underneath is like the crunchiest earth mama. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, they obviously end up getting married, and like that was not a question in my mind. Like I kind of figured like, yeah, like they're gonna be the one of the ones. Like what's
I actually predicted all of them correctly, which is a first for me. So I was like,
good for you.
On the back. But yeah, they to me are Zach and Bliss.
Yes.
Those are their kind of forebears in the franchise. And so I was like, I see the same path for them, that they're going to overcome this and they're going to be like, we found the one oddball that matches my exact kind of oddball, and I'm not going to let that go.
I love that you remember all these people's names, Claire. Like now
you don't understand. I practically dream about these people.
Once you said Zach and Bliss, I was like, oh yeah, like Zach and Bliss, but I could never have brought those names out of my head.
Yeah. I forget what seasons people were on, but the couples are all like burned into my brain.
All right. So the last couple is Catherine and Freddie. They were, what would you call the couple? I mean, to me, they were sort of the centerpiece of the season. They were not the golden couple necessarily, because I think it was always a question of whether they were going to, you know, complete the circle. What would you call sort of their archetype of a couple for Love is Blind?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we have a term for it, but they are kind of like the anti-golden couple. They're like the couple that gets a lot of screen time by virtue of not being very stable.
Right.
And so they carry the season dramatically, right? Like there is always that hope that they'll end up together.
You root for them.
But it seems like there are maybe too many problems for that to happen.
Yes.
By the end, I wasn't rooting for them.
Oh, okay. All right. So tell me sort of your journey with Kat and Freddie.
I mean, at the beginning, I just mostly saw them as a backdrop to Demi and Ollie, honestly. I was like, oh, Freddie is the guy that she's going to get with when it becomes clear that Ollie is not going to work out. Because I'm not super drawn to Kat or Freddie, just as a top line sort of like first impression. I came to really like Freddie a lot. Like I found him very endearing as the season went on. And I found Kat to be sort of the person, like the unlikable female protagonist, where you're like, I don't like you because you're so messy and flawed in ways that maybe remind me of myself in uncomfortable ways. And so I want to push them away.
Sure.
And so I think that's what makes them compelling. In a large part, it's really that Kat is this complicated figure with these traits that maybe make you want to push her away, but then you also, maybe your heart goes out to her, at least mine does. At first, it seemed like they just are two like hotties who are going to work out together and just live a very basic lifestyle of like going out to restaurants and working out at the gym and being hot together. And then it becomes clear that like Kat has these deep abandonment issues. And so she starts pushing Freddie away in ways that feel really unkind and unfair. And then he eventually gets tired of it and starts pushing her away. And then she panics and she tries to win him back by promising that she is not the kind of person that she clearly is.
Mm-hmm.
And it just starts to feel like this really toxic spiral. And it's hard to see how they get out of it, because he is now so afraid that she isn't being honest about who she is. And she is so afraid to be honest about who she is. And how do you ever really get back on track? And then they have a wedding day.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, he was much steadier, I think, than like maybe you expect him to be. He has a shit together. He owns his own business, owns his house. You know, I think about that house reveal when they're walking through his house. She's like, oh my God, like you have like furniture. You know what I mean? Like he kind of has, he's further along, I guess, in sort of like his maturity than you'd expect. And like, yeah, just by looking at him, you'd be like, yeah, like he's somebody who wants to go out with her too. And like, but he is like a total homebody. So they have that fundamental lifestyle difference. And just when you think that she like convinces you that she's like ready to sort of like not go out all the time and like sort of like, that's not the biggest issue for her. Like she clearly like that's who she is. And that's, you know, more power to her, but that's not, she's not somebody who's going to stay in on a Friday night. Like that's just not, I mean, her and Ollie were talking about what places they go out to in London. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that was a huge little moment. And I think that was very telling.
I thought it was interesting that Ollie and Freddie both ended up feeling like she was too much the kind of girl who wanted to go to Cirque. And she kept telling everyone, no, I don't really want to go to Cirque, but somehow everyone keeps getting that impression.
She must have talked about it more than we ever saw.
I mean, at a certain point, like the common factor is you.
Right. Totally. But yeah, like I did find myself rooting for them. And I think maybe because like he checked so many boxes and he was such a sweet guy in the end. And like, I loved how he was with his brother. And I like just loved that whole dynamic. And he seemed really genuine in like sort of his desire for somebody to settle down with. But I think that like you said, like, I don't think that Catherine was there yet. I don't think that she is like necessarily at that point where she actually is ready to settle down, but she wants to be there. And I think that was sort of in conflict within her. So then we get to the wedding day. And he breaks her heart. He's like,
yeah.
And I thought that the aftermath of that, one thing I was sort of waiting for on these last two episodes was like, I like the post wedding drama, you know.
Yeah.
I want the run out. I want the sort of confrontation in the bridal suite. I want the talking to the parents. And we finally got that with these two, where he sits down with her parents. I thought it was a really mature, great conversation where he was like, listen, like I'm not abandoning her. I just feel like we have things to work out, basically. And then he goes upstairs to see her and immediately her body language is like scooting away, getting his hand off her.
Yeah.
You knew it was not gonna, they were never gonna come back together when you saw that.
Yeah. It's possible they'll have a more productive conversation when she's had a little more time to process, but I would be surprised if they got back together. And honestly, if they do get back together, I don't think that there's any actual hope for them long term. I think that probably completely shattered her trust. And that, as we saw when she found out he cheated on someone else 7 yeah. years ago, she was unable to like be fully present in that relationship for a long time until she felt like he was leaving her. Mm. And that kind of motivated her to drop it. I think that her trust is so easily broken and then she's not able to like really fully participate in their relationship. So I don't really see how she's going to be able to be in a relationship yeah. with him. She's going to be shit testing
so
him
sad.
And like punishing him, which I relate to. It's hard.
But like, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
it's so sad. It's like,
functional.
It's like, that's a true issue that she has like within her, the abandonment thing. And like, I just.
Yeah. And I wish that Freddie had not. I wonder if he thought he was going to say yes. Like he gave her earrings that matched her
yes.
engagement ring.
I know. Oh yeah. This is what I meant to bring up. That he gives her this gift right before the wedding, waiting for her when she gets there. I think the sister got to him. The sister was anti. The sister yeah. got in his head, and that's why he said no, I think.
I think so, too. I think that he was maybe on the fence, but leaning yes. And he was like, I just got to take the leap. I love this person. This is our moment. If I leave her at the altar, she'll never forgive me. I'm going to reassure her. I'm going to go all in. And then his sister gave voice to like the very thing that was kind of niggling at him. Because then afterwards, he's like, what my sister said, I was thinking that anyway, which seems telling.
Yes,
like he's
but he wouldn't
to
have left
that.
He would not have left the gift. I just don't think he would have left the gift if he was planning on saying no. I think
I'm
glad you brought that up.
Mean. It's
yes.
mean
oh
to
God,
convince her to give her all those notes and gifts and like, I'm here with you. And then to be like, psych. Because she's not going to keep wearing the ring. Even if you stay together, she's not going to keep wearing the ring after she got dumped at the altar. Like
no
they never
way.
Stay engaged after they.
Definitely not. And it's like, it did break my heart when she was like, I never want to be married ever again. I never want to have another wedding or something.
Yeah.
That broke my heart for her.
It yeah.
Yeah.
I suspect that she'll come around on that. But no, it's
I agree.
I think that it especially for women where things are very, there's a very loaded expectation of like the bridal thing is something you get to do once. And like you wear the white dress. And if you've done it before, you're kind of tainted. You're not like a virgin anymore. You know, there's still that baggage, even though we don't really expect brides to be virgins anymore. It sucks to like get dressed up for your big day and then be sort of humiliated instead.
You think
their relationship was just not, they had so many.
It wasn't there. Yeah.
You know,
it wasn't
he wanted the prenup and she didn't understand that. She wasn't, I think, being totally honest about her lifestyle. She was being really mean to him all the time.
She also was laughing at, they were with her friends and they were like, Freddie, what do you do? And Kat just starts laughing. She's like, he's a funeral director. And it's like, oh, yeah, he owns his own business that let him buy a house. Don't laugh at that.
The fact that he is like an incredibly hot 32-year-old and he's also a funeral director is, I mean,
it's iconic,
I think
honestly.
It's incredible. Like, it's so cool. Like, it's actually like the biggest sign that he's actually like a solid guy is that he's like, I'm this hot 32-year-old and I'm willing to spend my days happily like helping families at the hardest time of their lives and making that my life's work. Like, that's so cool.
It's admirable. Very much so. Yeah.
She seemed like definitely embarrassed about certain things.
For sure. For sure. She has some, I mean, a lot of these people have work to do, but yeah. Well, Claire, that's all the couples.
That's all of them.
Do you have any other lingering thoughts about Love is Blind UK, other than telling everybody that you know to watch it?
Oh, definitely watch it. A couple outstanding thoughts I had about this season. One, the first season is always the best, I think.
So true.
Because you get those genuine couples who...
Yeah.
Yeah. They go in really invested in the process. And then more and more you get the people on who are like, oh, this is my big break. This is my reality TV moment. And things get shakier.
More Sams. Yeah.
More Sam. Like, it's basically all Sams in some of these seasons recently. I also thought that they did like a weird move with the casting, which is it made pretty much all of the cast extremely hot, like in a conventional sense. Like,
sure.
A lot of people who looked very like they'd had a glow up for the cameras.
Instagrammable.
Yeah. And I think on Love is Blind US, they've traditionally tried to really have looks not be as much of a factor, not always successfully, but you see more like ordinary looking people who don't look like they would be Instagram models on the show. And so I wondered why they did that on this season.
Yeah. I wonder if it was like an overcorrection because they were casting quote unquote older people who are 32. Right. But you know what I mean? Like, maybe right, that's part of it.
32-year-olds. Yeah, maybe. And also, like, I do wonder if they wanted to actually make it less likely the couples would break up after seeing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that is a sort of cynical way of producing.
It's a valid thing to propose, I think. Yeah.
I don't know. It's something a lot of people noted about this season, and Emma and I immediately did as well.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's going to be something that the other Love is Blind franchises move in the direction of.
Yeah. Well, I do hope, as you said, as we said at the top, I kind of do have this is proof of concept that I think that casting, again, the slightly, you know, even just like averaging 5 years older, I think makes a big difference in terms of maybe the success of some of the couples. So I would love to see that on the US version. I really would.
Yeah, I really think it should be treated like, you know, Love Island Senior. Like,
sure,
you have to be 28 to be on Love is Blind.
Yeah, it's hard to take them seriously when they're 24. It really is.
Yeah.
It takes you out of it in some ways.
Like, even if you're ready to meet your husband, I really doubt that you're ready, or wife, I really doubt that you're ready to actually be married to them. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, maybe you're ready to meet them, you know, and then you'll get married after 5 years of dating.
But not 2 months. Exactly.
You can't even rent a car yet. Like, come on.
Oh my God. Well, Claire, and that's all for Love is Blind UK season one. Thanks for doing this. Where can everybody listen to your podcast, subscribe to the newsletter, plug all the things before we sign off?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This is such a delight. You can find my podcast with Emma about The Bachelor. Love to see it anywhere you listen to podcasts. It's a Stitcher podcast. And you can find our newsletter and newsletter podcast, Rich Text, at clareandemma.substack.com. That is typically where we recap Love is Blind and a lot of the other Netflix shows and, you know, Lindsay Lohan rom-coms, cultural concepts.
Bravo shows. I've been on there doing some Bravo shows. Stuff.
Yes. Yep. Gibson's always coming on to help, especially because I don't know very much about Bravo, but we do cover a little Bravo now. Thank you, Gibson. Yeah. So you can find that there. And we're on Instagram at Claire and Emma Pod. And yeah, check us out.
And also, you guys, the newsletter, once a week, Claire and Emma just send out really great recommendations every single week of things they're watching, listening to, shopping, all those different things. So definitely subscribe there because I always love seeing that in my inbox. So,
oh, thank you. Yeah. That means a lot.
Well, Claire, thanks so much for doing this and we'll talk again soon.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform for some new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.